Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 8:04 Central African Time. Joining us on the segment, Sheikh Talki, the member of Parliament, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam. I can see him very happy indeed, and he's really, I mean, being part of a country, being part of a parliament, being part of a government that really has shook the world and is gaining the admiration of all and sundry, all people that are standing up for haq and good, are looking up at you, parliamentarians, looking up to you, Afrika Burwa. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you feeling this beautiful morning, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam?
Oh, alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, nice little cooler day in the city of Durban, of course. But otherwise, all is going on. There's a whole lot. As you know, we are anticipating the coming week, where the International Court of Justice is going to be hearing the complaint lodged by South Africa. And of course, various analysts have been raising concerns. Some of them have articulating their version or their opinion of what it can be expected. One thing is not in doubt, though, is that, of course, Israel will be found guilty. And I think the only concern is what happens from there. But on the local front, I must tell you, political parties are gearing up. A lot of money is coming into the country. Yes, indeed, I think they're gearing up for the election, promising all kinds of things to the electorate. And but again, I think the message that must go out to our people, there's one more voter registration. You can still register online. Don't hesitate to to go out there and make sure that you have registered to vote. Every vote counts, every vote, particularly in this election, which we are we're facing a crossroads in this particular election, the do or die election, to be honest with you. Well, there's some very poor statistics in terms of teenage pregnancy in the country. If you look at what a mammoth, massive problem it's becoming. But my question is, Brother Shafa, this matter has been raised. I personally have raised this 20, 30, 40 times in Parliament, repeatedly raising concerns as to what was happening. The children, 10-year, 12-year-old, 14-year-olds are giving birth. 3,200 and some odd children last year gave birth that were between the ages of 10 and 14. Despite the fact that 91,000 children gave birth, and of that 91,000, 88,000 children are still at school. But the point is that there has not been any prosecutions as far as these children that are falling pregnant, particularly from adults who are fathers. But if you look at the statistics that we have, where 78% of fathers in a black household are absent, and 56%, particularly in the colored families. I mean, what does it simply tell you? This dysfunctional state of our society is going to continue. It can only get progressively worse over the period of time. But I think we're not focusing on the problem. You know, we believe that if you go out and roll out police officers and have some of these sessions that you are having, gender based violence structures that you're putting in place, it's not going to solve the problem. Let's get to the root cause of the problem and sort it out. The country is not even in a position to be able to absorb a population or increase of over 1 million every year. You cannot do that because economic growth is low in the country. There's no conducive environment in the country to be able to absorb these people so that they can be productive. And I think the message that we're giving out with this child support grant, first of all, can a child survive on 350 then? Now, if a child can't survive on 350 then, how did we come to this figure that you must give 350 then? Should we not ensure that people are more productive, people create job opportunities for people so that they can get their dignity back, they can earn their money, earn a reasonable amount of money so that they can look after these children and the families and themselves. And the other thing we have is, it's what I call black tax, where particularly the vulnerable communities, and I think to a very large extent, we find this in the black community, you still find it in the Indian community, to a very large extent in the colored communities as well. You try to stay away from race, but you can't run away from the reality of what's going on the ground. And that tax issue is where a person goes out there, you know, family members have made a lot of sacrifices to make sure where the children go. In turn, the children have to go back now and go and earn and look after all those families and the extended families and things, which means that poverty will always remain because you're paying taxes to government, but you're also in another way being taxed because you have the responsibility of going and taking care of extended family members. So look at the pressure and the burden that it puts on an ordinary person, whereas there should be a system in the country to accommodate the people. I mean, particularly if you look at the vulnerable community, the aged and things like that. South Africa is facing a crisis because we are not willing to address the root causes of the various kinds of challenges that we have in the country. An ideal example is, I mean, your energy crisis. You know, well, I see them, the president is now eventually given both Minister Godan and Ramaphosa exactly what their duties and their tasks are. So he's defined it for them. I still see a lot of overlap there as well. But again, you know, you're not getting to the root cause of why we're having an energy crisis in the country. You don't need a rocket scientist to know and understand that your population has increased from 30-some-odd million to 62 million. You know, you don't, that the demand will increase, that your infrastructure is aging. You know how to replace your car very well, but you don't know how to go near, you know, replace your power stations and things of that nature. So there's a whole lot that's going on, and I think what we need, South Africa needs, is we don't need politicians. We need statesmen and stateswomen. We need people to come out. You know, I was speaking to somebody in Johannesburg yesterday, and there's a youngster. And I tell you what he said to me, and he said to all of us that he was addressing. He says, you don't know how difficult it is to be able to go and convince a youth, particularly a Muslim youth, that he needs to go out there and register to vote and be part and parcel of the future of this country. He says he just gets a not interested. He hears just a not interested. But let me tell you what he raised a very serious concern about. He says, I think we, to a very large extent, are underestimating the seriousness of the drug addiction problem that we're having among the Muslim youth of today. That is what he says to me. He says he tries and tries and tries, but getting nowhere. He just sees it getting progressively worse all the time. And I think we need to go back to our roots. We need to go back to our culture, our tradition, our religion. We need to do that because I think we're losing a grip on this. That is why the dysfunction, families are in such a state of dysfunction.
Yeah, Mother, looking at the story, it says Bait Bridge border. Farmers are digging trenches to prevent crossing stolen cars. I mean, this should have been done 25 years ago, Ahmad.
Remember, we inherited a country, and we mustn't forget this. You know, and I'm not trying to defend apartheid. No, certainly not. It was wrong. But I think we must not forget that we've inherited a country that, to a very large extent, areas, particularly rural communities and areas close to those borders where there are black communities or non-white communities, you know, they were very neglected. Neglected to the extent there were not enough measures being put in place to uplift these people. And so they saw opportunities, you know, between emigrating to countries close there, and others saw opportunities to come in there. Remember also when it comes to, it came to the issue of mines and things, it was not South Africans. In fact, South Africans had no interest in working in these agricultural land. They had no interest to work in mines. So what was happening? They were recruiting these people from the neighboring countries. It is for that reason you would find that people of Lesotho, they will say, as far as we are concerned, we own these things. This is our property. We lived here, we worked here, we mined here, we did everything here, it's ours. That is why they claim. You have the same thing with people from Swaziland, same thing from people from Mozambique, And Zimbabwe people have been coming and working in this country because people locally were not interested in doing them. So, you know, I would agree to a very large extent that the measures we got in place in our borders and are insufficient. However, you know, people must be realistic. If they only go there to the borders and look at how those borders, each country borders each other, and how the, you know, vulnerable you are for people crossing over, you know, you can't fence them. You've never fenced them in any case, but it's a very costly exercise. And will it last? It won't. But there are certain areas, no matter how much you try, no matter how much of effort you put in place to try and prevent this, it's not really going to work, to be honest with you, unless you got them patrolling those borders all the time in all those areas, day and night. I mean, people have been crossing crocodile-infested rivers to come across. That is how dangerous. Look at the chances and the risks that they have been taking. I know putting the into the cars and sending the cars on the boat, you know, right down from St. Lucia and things of that area. So there's a whole lot that you need to put in place. But because South Africa appears to be a free-for-all, you understand, and South Africa is one of those countries, even when refugees come in here, refugees are integrated here in South Africa into the normal communities. Whereas in many other countries, refugees are confined to a particular area. So you can have proper control of them, not in South Africa. So you need a holistic approach if you want to actually deal with this. You're not going to be able to deal with it in isolation and things. That one, if you came up with one brilliant idea, it's going to solve the problem. No, it's not. Problem is bigger than that. And our neighboring countries are also going through a very difficult time. So they see South Africa as a haven for economic opportunities. That is the reason why they come there. Nobody will leave their country and come here unless, you know, there are better opportunities. And that's why they come here. And what is worse, our systems, people come in, they just whether they know or they don't even know, whether they live with or not is not important. Just on paper, so that what, so it means that they get the normal residentship in South Africa and thing. So address all these things. You understand? I mean, why is it if you go to a country, Australia, New Zealand, wherever it is, that before you even think of leaving there? So there's a host of criteria that you've got to comply with before you even consider it. But when it comes to countries like South Africa, it's a free-for-all. So, yeah, these are just some of the reasons that I believe that they need to, the measures that they need to put in place and address them holistically so that we can deal with these problems. Otherwise, people are still going to be coming in here. How do you stop somebody from saying, I met somebody from Zimbabwe, I want to marry him or marry him? How? You can't. You can give them visa, they'll come here. The moment they come here, they get married. Previously, you would have had to go to their country of origin, marry them there if you want to apply for them to get a spousal visa and things. No more. You can do it here now. So you're creating an environment. That is the problem.
Yeah, I see that South Africa doesn't learn from... Yeah, from many. I mean, you go to China, if you cross the border, they'll kill you. You go to any other African country and say, I want to open a business in, say, in the middle of Nigeria. They say, who are you? Move out from here. But in South Africa, I mean, yeah, you find all these guys. They come, they virtually take over your suburbs and they look at you like you are the foreigner, Ahmed.
Definitely. And let me tell you, you've gone to the extent, Brother Shafir, that even those that are unlawful in the country, they believe they have a right. They believe they have more rights to to this country than you do. And if you ever have to do that, you know, take them on, you're going to run into very serious trouble. But likewise, you can go into some of these other countries. You can walk into any of the other countries, you could feel that you are different. You yourself can feel different. But when they come into this country, they take another ball game. There's a sense of entitlement here. You know, perhaps, I don't know, maybe because they feel that they were in the forefront of, you know, in our struggle, which I do agree many of these countries did come to our rescue when we needed them most. But that still does not mean you must have a free fall. I can still align myself with the fact that these people were there when we needed them. We need to do whatever we can to assist them when they are in need. You don't know when the situation will have a ripple effect on South Africa again. We don't know. You can see where the country is heading to. But on humanitarian grounds, we are all Africans, all from the African continent. We live here. This is our home. And we need to protect each other. If we don't protect each other, we'll always be vulnerable like we are, and we'll always be manipulated by the West. And that's the problem with us. I mean, this country is a beautiful continent. It has all the natural assets and everything it needs for to be one of the dominating continents in the world. But it's the mercy of us.
Now, you said that beautifully there. Look at a message from Yakut. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed. I know you for a long time. You are a toast of EMEA Bank also." Hey, I didn't know that, Ahmed. He says, "The bad news, Ahmed, is that South Africans must know that we don't have a border. When people say they see a borderless South Africa, we are correct in a borderless country. Our country is in a mess. It's open. It's open to all. And it's amazing that the Americans and the Zionists haven't taken advantage of already running amok here." Ahmed, how you respond to your friend Yakut here?
My brother Yakut, Jazakallah. Yes, well, no, I want to agree that if you say they haven't taken, they've taken advantage. The West controls and the Zionists control this country. Look left, right, front, back, anywhere you'll see. They control. Look at every industry you can think of. They control it. I was on the flight last night and they were giving you a juice to drink, Cappy. And I'm saying to the guys, can we see who makes it? Product of Coca-Cola. So we're saying don't drink Coca-Cola, but yes, we got Cappy. Cappy is part of Coca-Cola. Liquid fruit part of Coca-Cola. So they have captured us. There's no doubt about it. But I agree with you. There is no rule. South Africa is like in a state of lawlessness. There's really rule. The problem is even the levels of corruption are very high. You speak to people, they will tell you very clearly. You want a document in South Africa, if you are a foreigner, you won't get it. It'll be very difficult to get it. But all you have to do is tell some agent that you know to contact his contacts there. 20 grand at a price, 30 grand at a tag, it's done. In a week, you'll get what you want. This is the crux of the problem we are facing. So the levels of corruption, and the corruption continues to the extent it does because of a lack of consequences. Consequences, when government officials, anybody, you know, people often blame politicians, but nobody seems to want to be blaming, you know, the officials themselves where a lot of the corruption is taking place. Nobody wants to blame the private sector, which is also responsible for a lot of the corruption. It takes two to tango, they said. You cannot tell me that only a politician will make the run. Actually, you can tell you politicians are out of the equation right now. It's the officials together with the private sector that are involved in corrupt activities. And that is why I agree with my brother. We've got like a borderless country. People, no matter what you put there, it's not going to solve the problem. Leave everything. Leave everywhere. Let's talk about OR Tambo Airport. It's a free for all. I'm told that when people come in here, they come with no papers. And they stand to go to a particular counter. They go to a particular counter because that's where they would be able to. They've already made the arrangements, they paid the money, and that's how they come in. And of course, the minister and his team has done something about it. It's not good enough. If you look at the bus that leaves every Sunday, Cape Town, to go to Zim, that bus takes about at least 25 or 30% of the people in the bus got absolutely no papers, but they can go in and come out, come in with no problem at all. Yes. It was brought to the attention of the minister. He confiscated the bus, arrested, did what he had to do. Did it stop? No, it's continuing up to now.
Yeah, this message from Nafiz. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed. So much of complaints have been made about stolen cars have been taken to Zimbabwe. Not over the river in these big, big, big boats, but it was reported to the army. They were not there. The local farmers started doing the digging of the trenches to prevent cars from being driven over. But still, nothing is done by these corrupt officials that are at the border. Perhaps we need to have powerful security companies to take over rather than South African officials to do this job. Ahmed, how do you advise? Ahmed, I don't know.
Despite the fact that we have a lot of security companies with big business in South Africa, has it reduced the levels of crime? No.
Mm.
It hasn't made much difference, to be honest with you. In fact, it just created another industry. But I can tell you that even that, you know, some of the cars that go across the border, brother, owners themselves send their cars across the border when they can't pay for it and they want to claim insurances. They do all kinds of things. I agree there's a weakness at the border. I cannot understand how any vehicle, and perhaps that is one of the things I will discuss with the minister soon, is how is it, forget about the trenches and going through other unlawful. These cars go through the border through normal legal processes. Because it's not just about a car getting stolen and going across. There is a link between those cars that are being stolen, together with the licensing authorities in the country, together with the roadworthy certificate, you know, even those that, so if you don't deal together with, of course, let's not forget motor vehicles, scrap yards, cars are being stolen and chopped up there overnight and parts being sold. You've got to break this entire chain if you want to stop that. You know, somebody said to me last night about cable theft, and they were talking, I went to a function last night, and they were talking about how the cable theft, and they are told, no, you must take the person to where they stole it from. And the guy says, I told the police, no, I want to see who is buying it. Because if you can stop the, you know, to make sure you shut down these people that are buying it, people won't steal it. But because there's a demand for it, something I've raised many times, because there's a demand for stolen goods, people steal it. People buy, continue stealing so that people, because they have got buyers. That's the problem. So what is the police doing, or law enforcement, or not only law enforcement, also the local authorities, in ensuring there are measures to conduct oversight to see that these businesses are compliant, they are working above board, they are not involved in corrupt activities. It's not there. That is the problem you are sitting with. So I said to the guy, in terms of the law, a second-hand dealer has got to have proper records of everything he buys and he sells, with the details of from who, must be kept on the floor for 7 days. And the guy says to me, but it won't work because the police take much longer than 7 days to investigate it. By that time, the exhibits are gone, sold. So that's the problem you're facing. It's the entire system that needs to be dealt. But if you don't want people to steal the goods, then close the market to buy the goods. That's the problem. Now, even to go through the border, you need contacts. But what do they do? Let me tell you, they will change your engine number on your vehicle. They will change your chassis number on your vehicle. So, and they'll create a false documentation. When they go through to the border, Brother Shepherd, they are showing this. What are those border control going to do? The border control will have a look at it on the system. Report it stolen? No. They don't have a link directly to the licensing authorities. They don't have that. All they can see is, hold on, you've got your ID, you've got your passport, the engine is not stolen, vehicle is not stolen, check it, thank you very much, go. That's it, simple. But the papers that were given are false. How are they going to know that the papers are? That is why I raised this before, to say there should be a link from manufacturers on engine numbers, chassis numbers and things of vehicle, so that any other number that is created or so will not, and may not, that will not exist, the system must throw it out immediately. So if you link that to the borders and things like that, you know, to the system, which we have a problem with in the country, because that is why I say the people are not paying tax in the country, particularly foreign owned shops. Why they're not paying? There's no link between those giving them a license at local level together with SARS and others. Same thing with the social development. Can you see what 50 some odd million or 30 some odd million last year were paid out to people who had already died because there's no system to pick it up quickly, you see? So this is the problem. Unless you have a coordinated approach to that, you're going to run into trouble. So if you had a manufacturer, VW, for that matter, manufacturer Golf, and that is the engine number, that is the chassis number. Engine numbers can change, of course, you know. But even those that build the engine numbers, the engines, the numbers should be there, and only those numbers must exist. So it must go. The moment you manufacture a vehicle, you're supposed to put it into a system that at any time you'd be able to pick up which who manufactured it, where did it come from, which dealer it was sold to, who it, the entire history of it. So if you can put systems of that nature, but I'll tell you why manufacturers don't do it. Because the more you steal, the more they sell. That's what it is about. Why do they make these vehicles that are, it is so easy to amend or change the numbers. If you remember before, people used to take an angle grinder, you know, with this disc and raise the chassis number and punch another chassis number. That is what they used to do, even on the engines. So there are ways we can stop these things. But you need the support. Exactly the same thing with cell phones, Brother Shabam. What a massive market the stealing of cell phones has become. Why? Because people can steal it and they can go and use it. But yet, the cell phone companies who manufacture this can put mechanisms in place that any cell phone that is stolen will never be able to be used again, and you'll be able to identify anybody attempting to use it. But why won't they do it? Because every time a cell phone is stolen, they sell another cell phone. That is how the system is designed. That's the problem here.
Well, Ahmed, on that system design, and they know what to block and what not to block, and they know who to tap and who not to tap. Yeah, those papers, that Epstein papers. Hey, they knew who to tap and who to trap, and they got them trapped. And now they're exposed, Ahmed. Before I let you go, what's your thoughts on those Epstein papers, Ahmed?
Yes, indeed. You know, I always say, I think we grew up with that term, Brother Shepherd, 10 days rogue must get caught. All that you try to do to manipulate and everything, it's going to come back to bite you at some stage. And that's the problem. So, you know, there's a whole lot that's going on in the world that we don't know about. And these people conduct their businesses, you know, freely. They can do as and what they want to do. But always remember that, you know, someday it's going to come back to bite you. And technology has advanced to such an extent. And unfortunately for our people, we are lagging behind in it. While countries like the Zionists and others are very advanced. And India also, if you talk about technology, is so advanced. And yet you can see their poor human rights records, how they can use the advantage they have in technology and how the Zionists are using them to infiltrate. You mean, I am told that you, at any given time, they can tell you where you are, exactly, exact spot where you are even sitting, even if it's in your own house, where you're in the lounge. They can tell you at any given time what your movement, who you spoke to, who you're communicating, who you're Googling, what you're checking, everything.
And the irony is, one of those in the Epstein papers is fighting the case for Israel.
For Israel.
Can you be? I mean, I think you should start off the case and say, hey, you. Yeah. Please, man. Please,
but I think what is important is in, on that matter, that I cannot see Israel not being found guilty. In fact, Joe Biden should be equally found guilty. But, you know, South Africa did not, I'm not sure why they did not add Joe Biden in it. But my question is, where is it going to go to after that, after you do find him? But yes, I think it will bring a lot of awareness. More people will wake up. You call for reform in all these institutions, international institutions. But, you know, unless something drastic is done to hold the Zionist state of Israel accountable, and measures are put in place to stop the genocide, you know, they're not going to listen. They're going to continue, Brother Shafir. That's the problem. They got an agenda. And the United States is fully behind them. So, you know, that's why I say that when you want to deal with them, start with the monster of all, the mother of all monsters. And that is the United States of America. Start with
good. Good point indeed, Ahmed. We'll let you go on that because you've got a busy day ahead. Hey, empowering children, doing this and that. And perhaps you could give us a glimpse in your itinerary for the rest of the day, Ahmed.
Well, yes, it's quite a long day. I'm expected to be in Escort for a meeting, but I've got a little family gathering. I don't know how to express this. Normally gatherings can be nice, colorful, fun, enjoyment. But some are difficult. It's the state of our country that brings us to the situation where we are. My daughter will be emigrating from South Africa, so we are having a little bit of a gathering later this afternoon, so we'll be meeting family and friends and things of that nature. It's two ways of looking at it. One, it is for better prospects, given what is happening in the country, but on the other hand, causes dysfunctional families, because can you imagine, you know, you thousands of kilometers away your children are. This is the society that we live in. This is what it creates. And yeah, so it's not the easiest of things to do. But I guess at the same time, you have to support your children in doing what they believe is best for themselves. They have a long way to go in life. And these are some of the things we have to do.
Yeah, Ahmed, you'll be relevant because tell your daughter she must tune in wherever she is just to listen to you on all the platforms. And you can just make a video call. You'll be there. Allah is with you. And you're serving, you know, she knows you're serving the country. And I'm making it. Gee, Ahmed.
The difficult thing will be for me is for my grandson.
Yes, yes. He's your... He's your shining light, Ahmed.
Yeah, he's going to be 7 this week. But we make dua that Allah SWT gives them guidance, gives them protection, you know, gives them success and prosperity, keeps them healthy, inshallah. The environment is not easy to go into completely new and clean up everything and start. It's like starting life all again, all over again, you know. So, yeah. But anyway,
inshallah. So the duas are with you, Ahmed, and with the family members. And, you know, you're a mashallah, brilliant man indeed. Allah keep you. Allah bless you. And jazakallah khair for being part of our team and conscientizing the ummah. You have a lovely family gathering. We'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.